people, Jace confided. The meek may inherit the earth, but at the moment, it belongs to the conceited, like me. He winked at the girls, who giggled and hid behind their hair. Clary sighed. How come they can see you? Glamours are a pain to use. Sometimes we don't bother. The incident with the girls on the train did seem to put him in a better mood. When they left the station and headed up the hill to Clary's apartment, he took one of the serif blades out of his pocket and started flipping it back and forth between his fingers and across his knuckles, humming to himself. Do you have to do that? Clary asked. It's annoying. Jace hummed louder. It was a loud, tuneful sort of hum, somewhere between Happy Birthday and the Battle Hymn of the Republic. I'm sorry I smacked you, she said. He stopped humming. Just be glad you hit me and not Alec. He would have hit you back. He seems to be itching for the chance, Clary said, kicking an empty soda can out of her path. What was it that Alec called you? Para something? Parabatai, said Jace. It means a pair of warriors who fight together, who are closer than brothers. Alec is more than just my best friend. My father and his father were Parabatai when they were young. His father was my godfather, that's why I live with him. They're my adopted family. But your last name isn't Lightwood. No, Jay said, and she would have asked what it was, but they arrived at her house and her heart had started to thump so loudly that she was sure it must be audible for miles. There was a humming in her ears, and the palms of her hands were damp with sweat. She stopped in front of the box hedges and raised her eyes slowly, expecting to see yellow police tape cordoning off the front door, smashed glass littering the lawn, the whole thing reduced to rubble. But there were no signs of destruction. Bathed in pleasant afternoon light, the brownstone seemed to glow. Bees droned lazily around the rose bushes under Madame Dorothea's windows. It looks the same, Clary said. On the outside. Jace reached into his jeans pockets and drew out another one of the metal and plastic contraptions she'd mistaken for a cell phone. So that's a sensor? What does it do? She asked. It picks up frequencies like a radio does, but these frequencies are demonic in origin. Demon shortwave? Something like that. Jace held the sensor out in front of him as he approached the house. It clicked faintly as they climbed the stairs, then stopped. Jace frowned. It's picking up some trace activity, but that could just be left over from that night. I'm not getting anything strong enough for there to be demons present now. Clary let out a breath she hadn't realized she'd been holding. Good. She bent to retrieve her keys. When she straightened up, she saw the scratches on the front door. It must have been too dark for her to have seen them last time. They looked like claw marks, long and parallel, raked deeply into the wood. Jace touched her arm. I'll go first, he said. Clary wanted to tell him that she didn't need to hide behind him, but the words wouldn't come. She could taste the terror she'd felt when she'd first seen the Ravener. The taste was sharp and coppery on her tongue like old pennies. He pushed the door open with one hand, beckoning her after him with the hand that held the sensor. Once inside the entryway, Clary blinked, adjusting her eyes to the dimness. The bulb overhead was still out, the skylight too filthy to let in any light, and shadows lay thick across the chip floor. Madame Dorothea's door was firmly shut. No light showed through the gap under it. Clary wondered uneasily if anything had happened to her. Jace raised his hand and ran it along the banister. It came away wet, streaked with something that looked blackish red in the dim light. Blood. Maybe it's mine. Her voice sounded tinny. From the other night. It'd be dry by now if it were, Jace said. Come on. He headed up the stairs, Clary close behind him. The landing was dark, and she fumbled her keys three times before she managed to slide the right one into the lock. Jace leaned over her, watching impatiently. Don't breathe down my neck, she hissed. Her hand was shaking. Finally, the tumblers caught, the lock clicking open. Jace pulled her back. I'll go in first. She hesitated, then stepped aside to let him pass. Her palms were sticky, and not from the heat. In fact, it was cool inside the apartment, almost cold, chilly air seeped from the entryway, stinging her skin. She felt goosebumps rising as she followed Jace down the short hallway and into the living room. It was empty. Startlingly, entirely empty, the way it had been when they'd first moved in. The walls and floor bare, the furniture gone, even the curtains torn down from the windows. Only faint, lighter squares of paint on the wall showed where her mother's paintings had hung. As if in a dream, Clary turned and walked toward the kitchen, Jace pacing her, his light eyes narrowed. The kitchen was just as empty, even the refrigerator gone, the chairs, the table. The kitchen cabinet stood open, their bare shelves reminding her of a nursery rhyme. She cleared her throat. "What would demons," she said, "want with our microwave?" Jace shook his head, mouth curling under at the corners. "I don't know, but I'm not sensing any demonic presence right now. I'd say they're long gone." She glanced around one more time. Someone had cleaned up the spilled Tabasco sauce, she noticed distantly. "Are you satisfied?" Jace asked. "There's nothing here." She shook her head. "I want to see my room." He looked as if he were about to say something, then thought better of it. "If that's what it takes," he said, sliding the serif blade into his pocket. The light in the hallway was out, but Clary didn't need much light to navigate inside her own house. With Jace just behind her, she found the door to her bedroom and reached for the knob. It was cold in her hand, so cold it nearly hurt, like touching an icicle with your bare skin. She saw Jace look at her quickly, but she was already turning the knob, or trying to. It moved slowly, almost stickily, as if the other side of it were embedded in something glutinous and syrupy. The door blew outward, knocking her off her feet. She skidded across the hallway floor and slammed into the wall, rolling onto her stomach. There was a dull roaring in her ears as she pulled herself up to her knees. Jace, flat against the wall, was fumbling in his pocket, his face a mask of surprise. Looming over him like a giant in a fairy tale was an enormous man, big around as an oak tree, a broad-bladed axe clutched in one gigantic, dead white hand. Tattered, filthy rags hung off his grimy skin, and his hair was a single matted tangle thick with dirt. He stank of poisonous sweat and rotting flesh. Clary was glad she couldn't see his face. The back of him was bad enough. Jace had the serif blade in his hand. He raised it, calling out, "Sansanvi!" A blade shot from the tube. Clary thought of old movies where bayonets were hidden inside walking sticks released at the flick of a switch. But she'd never seen a blade like this before. Clear as glass with a glowing hilt, wickedly sharp and nearly as long as Jace's forearm. He struck out, slashing at the gigantic man who staggered back with a bellow. Jace whirled around, racing toward her. He caught her arm, hauling her to her feet, pushing her ahead of him down the hall. She could hear the thing behind them following. Its footsteps sounded like lead weights being dropped onto the floor, but it was coming on fast. They sped through the entryway and out onto the landing, Jace whipping around to slam the front door shut. She heard the click of the automatic lock and caught her breath. The door shook on its hinges as a tremendous blow struck against it from inside the apartment. Clary backed away to the stairs. Jace glanced at her. His eyes were glowing with manic excitement. "Get downstairs! Get out of the—" Another blow came, and this time the hinges gave way and the door flew outward. It would have knocked Jace over if he hadn't moved so fast that Clary barely saw it. Suddenly, he was on the top stair, the blade burning in his hand like a fallen star. She saw Jace look at her and shout something, but she couldn't hear him over the roar of the gigantic creature that burst from the shattered door, making straight for him. She flattened herself against the wall as it passed in a wave of heat and stink, and then its axe was flying, whipping through the air, slicing toward Jace's head. He ducked, and it thunked heavily into the banister, biting deep. Jace laughed. The laugh seemed to enrage the creature. Abandoning the axe, he lurched at Jace with his enormous fists raised. Jace brought the serif blade around in an arcing sweep, burying it to the hilt in the giant's shoulder. For a moment, the giant stood swaying. Then he lurched forward, his hands outstretched and grasping. Jace stepped aside hastily, but not hastily enough. The enormous fist caught hold of him as the giant staggered and fell, dragging Jace in his wake. Jace cried out once. There was a series of heavy and cracking thumps and then silence. Clary scrambled to her feet and raced downstairs. Jace lay sprawled at the foot of the steps, his arm bent beneath him at an unnatural angle. Across his legs lay the giant, the hilt of Jace's blade protruding from his shoulder. He was not quite dead, but flopping weakly, a bloody froth leaking from his mouth. Clary could see his face now. It was dead white and papery, latticed with a black network of horrible scars that almost obliterated his features. His eye sockets were red, suppurating pits. Fighting the urge to gag, Clary stumbled down the last few stairs, stepped over the twitching giant, and knelt down next to Jace. He was so still. She laid a hand on his shoulder, felt his shirt sticky with blood. His own or the giant's, she couldn't tell. Jace? His eyes opened. Is it dead? Almost, Clary said grimly. Hell, he winced. My legs. Hold still. Crawling around to his head, Clary slipped her hands under his arms and pulled. He grunted with pain as his legs slipped out from under the creature's spasming carcass. Clary let go, and he struggled to his feet, his left arm across his chest. She stood up. Is your arm all right? No, broken, he said. Can you reach into my pocket? She hesitated, nodded. Which one? Inside jacket, right side. Take out one of the Seraph blades and hand it to me. He held still as she nervously slipped her fingers into his pocket. She was standing so close that she could smell the scent of him, sweat and soap and blood. His breath tickled the back of her neck. Her fingers closed on a tube and she drew it out, not looking at him. Thanks, he said. His fingers traced it briefly before he named it. Sanvi. Like its predecessor, the tube grew into a wicked-looking dagger, its glow illuminating his face. Don't watch, he said, going to stand over the scarred thing's body. He raised the blade over his head and brought it down. Blood fountained from the giant's throat, splattering Jace's boots. She half expected the giant to vanish, folding in on itself the way the kid in Pandemonium had, but it didn't. The air was full of the smell of blood, heavy and metallic. Jace made a sound low in his throat. He was white-faced, whether with pain or disgust, she couldn't tell. I told you not to watch, he said. I thought it would disappear, she said. Back to its own dimension, you said. I said that's what happens to demons when they die. Wincing, he shrugged his jacket off his shoulder, burying the upper part of his left arm. That wasn't a demon. With his right hand, he drew something out of his belt. It was the smooth, wand-shaped object he used to carve those overlapping circles into Clary's skin. Looking at it, she felt her forearm begin to burn. Jace saw her staring and grinned the ghost of a grin. This, he said, is a stele. He touched it to an inked mark just below his shoulder, a curious shape almost like a star. Two arms of the star jutted out from the rest of the mark, unconnected. And this, he said, is what happens when shadow hunters are wounded. With the tip of the stele, he traced a line connecting the two arms of the star. When he lowered his hand, the mark was shining as if it had been etched with phosphorescent ink. As Clary watched, it sank into his skin like a weighted object sinking into water. It left behind a ghostly reminder. A pale, thin scar, almost invisible. An image rose in Clary's mind. Her mother's back, not quite covered by her bathing suit top, the blades of her shoulders and curves of her spine dappled with narrow, white marks. It was like something she had seen in a dream. Her mother's back didn't really look like that, she knew, but the image nagged at her. Jace let out a sigh. The tense look of pain leaving his face. He moved the arm slowly at first, then more easily, lifting it up and down, clenching his fist. Clearly, it was no longer broken. That's amazing, Clary said. How did you? That was an Iratze, a healing rune, Jace said. Finishing the rune with the stele activates it. He shoved the slim wand into his belt and shrugged his jacket back on. With the toe of his boot, he prodded the giant's corpse. We're going to have to report this to Hodge, he said. He'll freak out, he added, as if the thought of Hodge's alarm gave him some satisfaction. Jace, Clary thought, was the sort of person who liked it when things were happening, even things that were bad. Why will he freak out? Clary said. And I get that that thing isn't a demon, that's why the sensor didn't register, right? Jace nodded. You see the scars all over its face? Yes. Those were made with the stele, like this one. He tapped the wand in his belt. You ask me what happens when you carve marks onto someone who doesn't have Shadow Hunter blood? Just one mark will only burn you, but lots of marks, powerful ones, carved into the flesh of a totally ordinary human being with no trace of Shadow Hunter ancestry, you get this. He jerked his chin at the corpse. The runes are agonizingly painful. The marked ones go insane. The pain drives them out of their minds. They become fierce, mindless killers. They don't sleep or eat unless you make them, and they die usually quickly. Runes have great power and can be used to do great good, but they can also be used for evil. The Forsaken are evil. Clary stared at him in horror. But why would anyone do that to themselves? Nobody would. It's something that gets done to them. By a warlock, maybe, some downworlder gone bad. The Forsaken are loyal to the one who marked them, and they're fierce killers. They can obey simple commands, too. It's like having a slave army. He stepped over the dead Forsaken and glanced over his shoulder at her. I'm going back upstairs. But there's nothing there. There might be more of them, he said, almost as if he were hoping there would be. You should wait here. He started up the steps. I wouldn't do that if I were you, said a shrill and familiar voice. There are more of them where the first one came from. Jace, who was nearly at the top of the stairs, spun and stared. So did Clary, although she knew immediately who had spoken. That gravelly accent was unmistakable. Madame Dorothea? The old woman inclined her head regally. She stood in the doorway of her apartment, dressed in what looked like a tent made of raw purple silk. Gold chains glittered on her wrists and roped her throat. Her long, badger-striped hair straggled from the bun pinned to the top of her head. Jace was still staring. But more what? Clary said. More Forsaken, replied Dorothea with a cheerfulness that Clary felt didn't really fit the circumstances. She glanced around the entryway. You have made a mess, haven't you? I'm sure you weren't planning on cleaning up either. Typical. But you're a mundane, Jace said, finally finishing his sentence. So observant, said Dorothea, her eyes gleaming. The clay really broke the mold with you. The bewilderment on Jace's face was fading, replaced by a dawning anger. You know about the clave, he demanded. You knew about them, and you knew they were Forsaken in this house, and you didn't notify them? Just the existence of Forsaken is a crime against the Covenant. Neither clave nor Covenant have ever done anything for me, said Madame Dorothea, her eyes flashing angrily. I owe them nothing. For a moment, her gravelly New York accent vanished, replaced with something else, a thicker, deeper accent that Clary didn't recognize. Jace, stop it, Clary said. She turned to Madame Dorothea. If you know about the clave and the Forsaken, she said, then maybe you know what happened to my mother. Dorothea shook her head, her earrings swinging. There was something like pity on her face. My advice to you, she said, is to forget about your mother. She's gone. The floor under Clary seemed to tilt. You mean she's dead? No. Dorothea spoke the word almost reluctantly. I'm sure she's still alive, for now. Then I have to find her, Clary said. The world had stopped tilting. Jace was standing behind her, his hand on her elbow as if to brace her, but she barely noticed. You understand? I have to find her before... Madame Dorothea held up a hand. I don't want to involve myself in Shadow Hunter business. But you knew my mother. She was your neighbor. This is an official Clave investigation. Jace cut her off. I can always come back with the Silent Brothers. Oh, for the... Dorothea glanced at her door, then at Jace and Clary. I suppose you might as well come in, she said finally. I'll tell you what I can. She started toward the door, then halted on the threshold, glaring. But if you tell anyone I helped you, Shadow Hunter, you'll wake up tomorrow with snakes for hair and an extra pair of arms. That might be nice, an extra pair of arms, Jace said, handy in a fight. Not if they're growing out of your... Dorothea paused and smiled at him, not without malice. Neck. Yikes, said Jace mildly. Yikes is right, Jace Wayland. Dorothea marched into the apartment, her purple tent flying around her like a gaudy flag. Clary looked at Jace. Wayland? It's my name. Jace looked shaken. I can't say I like that she knows it. Clary glanced after Dorothea. The lights were on inside the apartment. Already the heavy smell of incense was flooding the entryway, mixing unpleasantly with the stench of blood. Still, I think we might as well try talking to her. What have we got to lose? Once you spend a bit more time in our world, Jace said, you won't ask me that again. Seven. The Five-Dimensional Door. Madame Dorothea's apartment seemed to have roughly the same layout as Clary's, though she'd made a very different use of the space. The entryway, reeking of incense, was hung with bead curtains and astrological posters. One showed the constellations of the zodiac, another a guide to Chinese magical symbols, and another showed a hand with fingers spread, each line on the palm carefully labeled. Above the hand, Latinate script spelled out the words, In Manibus Fortuna. Narrow shelves holding stacked books ran along the wall beside the door. One of the bead curtains rattled, and Madame Dorothea poked her head through. Interested in chiromancy? She said, noting Clary's gaze. Or just nosy? Neither, Clary said. Can you really tell fortunes? My mother had a great talent. She could see a man's future in his hand or the leaves at the bottom of his teacup. She taught me some of the tricks. She transferred her gaze to Jace. Speaking of tea, young man, would you like some? What? Jace said, looking flustered. Tea. I find it both settles the stomach and concentrates the mind. Wonderful drink, tea. I'll have tea, Clary said, realizing how long it had been since she'd eaten or drunk anything. She felt as if she'd been running on pure adrenaline since she woke up. Jace succumbed. All right, as long as it isn't Earl Grey, he added, wrinkling his fine bone nose. I hate bergamot. Madame Dorothea cackled loudly and disappeared back through the bead curtain, leaving it swaying gently behind her. Clary raised her eyebrows at Jace. You hate bergamot? Jace had wandered over to the narrow bookshelf and was examining its contents. You have a problem with that? You may be the only guy my age I've ever met who knows what bergamot is, much less that it's in Earl Grey tea. Yes, well, Jace said with a supercilious look, I'm not like other guys. Besides, he added, flipping a book off the shelf, at the Institute we have to take classes in basic medicinal uses for plants. It's required. I figured all your classes were stuff like Slaughter 101 and Beheading for Beginners. Jace flipped a page. Very funny, Frey. Clary, who had been studying the palmistry poster, whirled on him. Don't call me that. He glanced up, surprised. Why not? It's your last name, isn't it? The image of Simon rose up behind her eyes. Simon, the last time she had seen him, staring after her as she ran out of Java Jones. She turned back to the poster, blinking. No reason. I see, Jay said, and she could tell from his voice that he did see more than she wanted him to. She heard him drop the book back onto the shelf. "This must be the trash she keeps up front to impress credible mundanes," he said, sounding disgusted. "There's not one serious text here." "Just because it's not the kind of magic you do," Clary began crossly. He scowled furiously, silencing her. "I do not do magic," he said. "Get it through your head. Human beings are not magic users. It's part of what makes them human. Witches and warlocks can only use magic because they have demon blood." Clary took a moment to process this. "But I've seen you use magic. You use enchanted weapons. I use tools that are magical. And just to be able to do that, I have to undergo rigorous training. The rune tattoos on my skin protect me, too. If you tried to use one of the Seraph blades, for instance, it'd probably burn your skin, maybe kill you." "What if I got the tattoos?" Clary asked. "Could I use them then?" "No," Jace said crossly. "The marks are only part of it. There are tests, ordeals, levels of training. Look, just forget it, okay? Stay away from my blades. In fact, don't touch any of my weapons without my permission." "Well, there goes my plan for selling them all on eBay," Clary muttered. "Selling them on what?" Clary smiled blandly at him. "A mythical place of great magical power." Jace looked confused, then shrugged. "Most myths are true, at least in part." "I'm starting to get that." The bead curtain rattled again, and Madame Dorothea's head appeared. "Tea's on the table," she said. "There's no need for you two to keep standing there like donkeys. Come into the parlor."
"There's a parlor?" Clary said.
"Of course there's a parlor," said Dorothea. "Where else would I entertain?"
"I'll just leave my hat with the footman," said Jace.
Madame Dorothea shot him a dark look. "If you were half as funny as you thought you were, my boy, you'd be twice as funny as you are."
She disappeared back through the curtain, her loud humph nearly drowned out by rattling beads. Jace frowned.
"I'm not quite sure what she meant by that."
"Really?" said Clary. "Made perfect sense to me."
She marched through the bead curtain before he could reply. The parlor was so dimly lit that it took several blinks for Clary's eyes to adjust. Faint light outlined the black velvet curtains drawn across the entire left wall. Stuffed birds and bats dangled from the ceiling on thin cords, shiny dark beads where their eyes should have been. The floor was layered with frayed Persian rugs that spat up puffs of dust underfoot. A group of overstuffed pink armchairs were gathered around a low table. A stack of tarot cards bound with a silk ribbon occupied one end of the table, a crystal ball and a gold stand the other. In the middle of the table was a silver tea service laid out for company, a neat plate of stacked sandwiches, a blue teapot unfurling a thin stream of white smoke, and two teacups on matching saucers set carefully in front of two of the armchairs.
"Wow," Clary said weakly. "This looks great."
She took a seat in one of the armchairs. It felt good to sit down. Dorothea smiled, her eyes glinting with a sly humor. "Have some tea," she said, hefting the pot. "Milk? Sugar?" Clary looked sideways at Jace, who was sitting beside her and who had taken possession of the sandwich plate. He was examining it closely. "Sugar," she said. Jace shrugged, took a sandwich, and set the plate down. Clary watched him warily as he bit into it. He shrugged again. "Cucumber," he said in response to her stare.
"I always think cucumber sandwiches are just the thing for tea, don't you?"
Madame Dorothea inquired of no one in particular. "I hate cucumber," Jay said and handed the rest of his sandwich to Clary. She bit into it. It was seasoned with just the right amount of mayonnaise and pepper. Her stomach rumbled in grateful appreciation of the first food she'd tasted since the nachos she'd eaten with Simon.
"Cucumber and bergamot," Clary said. "Is there anything else you hate that I ought to know about?"
Jace looked at Dorothea over the rim of his teacup.
"Liars," he said.
Calmly, the old woman set her teapot down.
"You can call me a liar all you like. It's true. I'm not a witch, but my mother was."
Jace choked on his tea. That's impossible.
Why impossible? Claire